Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
Good morning. I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we answer your questions about all things estate planning, elder law, Medicaid planning, estate administration. It is a call-in show. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900, and we're happy to take your questions. And if you want to hear us more, is that possible? You know, you can sign up for one of our webinars this week. It's webinar week coming up.
Big week.
Yeah, it's always good.
That's right.
Yeah.
This week, we switched it up a little bit. Our webinars are at 10 in the morning instead of the afternoon. Maybe people want to do this early and then get out and do stuff for the rest of the day. So this Tuesday, it is what to do when a loved one dies. Wednesday, aging in place. And Thursday is wills versus trusts. And you can sign up for any of these webinars on our website at herzoglaw.com, or give the office a call, and we'll be happy to sign you up.
Yeah, I did my first one last month, and I was actually surprised how well attended it is. It's a great opportunity for some education for people, so I'm glad they're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I've had several clients say they watched it before they came in because they wanted to know a little bit more before they came to talk to us, and it's really a great way to learn about everything and get...
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
So, you have a vacation coming up, but it's not really a vacation, is it?
We call it that, I guess. It's going to be a vacation without sleep.
That's right. Phil is having a child. Well, you are not having the child. Your wife is having the child.
Yes, yes. She always hates when I say that. If you say we're pregnant, she was like, we're not pregnant. I'm pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So she is having a child on Monday, and then you will be there to help out on vacation.
Yeah, wow. Well, this one's baby number three, so we'll be outnumbered.
Yes.
She's going to need a little bit of support for a little bit.
And so, you thought your life was different, huh, when the first one was
at least we know what to do generally at this point.
That's
but
true.
Yeah,
that's
number
true,
three
yeah.
is
my husband
yeah.
and I, we stopped at two because we're like, yeah, we don't want to be outnumbered. It was two. We could each grab one and like go off in separate directions. And
well, yeah. I just heard a story of my mother-in-law's friend's daughter had two and is now having triplets. Can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
Oh my gosh.
I would
lose my mind.
Talk about outnumbered, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's no way your wife is having more than one, is there?
At this point, I think you would know. So, right. Yeah. Just the one coming this Monday. So, I'm excited.
That's anyway. Exciting.
Yes.
That's great. So, Dave is off today, probably golfing somewhere. He's been getting some really good scores lately, I heard. So,
he's up in his game. Yeah. I'm still terrible. I'm doing lessons now, so I got
to doing lessons.
I got to hone my skills so I don't embarrass myself out there.
That's right.
So, I was thinking, Jane Marie, I came to you yesterday, a problem that I've been seeing a lot recently. Well, not a problem, but the past week or two, I've had it happen a few times to me. The question of whether or not an estate has to be probated, if anyone has to go to court, right? And two quick examples, you know, and they were the opposite side of the spectrum this week. One came to me from another attorney. They're handling a real estate transaction. They were already in the process, so they had a buyer involved. And it came up when they looked at the deed, there was a question of did the person whose spouse passed away have the authority to sign? The contract, to sell the property.
Right.
And she just assumed that she did. They owned it together. And when I looked at everything, it turns out that the way it was owned meant that they did actually have to go through probate, have to go to court.
That's bad to find that out when you're about to sell the property.
Especially at that stage. She wasn't very happy to hear what I had to say, and she understood. So that's, that's one end of the spectrum. People think that they don't have to go to court when they do.
Right.
And then the opposite end, I had someone come to me, explain a whole situation. I know I have to go to probate. How do I get this started? And at the end of the day, I told them, actually, you don't have to go to probate, and here's why. And they were happy. So it was the opposite.
That's a happy surprise.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But anyway, so we see opposite ends of that spectrum, and determining whether or not someone has to go to court when a loved one or family friend passes away is always one of the first questions I try to answer when I'm in a consult, when I'm speaking to somebody, is asking the right questions to determine that. Right.
Yes, that's right. And, I mean, we have people come in all the time and, you know, right after someone passes away, and you're right, either that they think one way or the other, and it's always a surprise to them, right?
Yeah, yeah, too often. So it's, you know, it's a thing that it's hard to hone that skill of identifying what has to happen. Mm-hmm. That's where we come in.
Right.
But there's a lot of misinformation out there. I actually, this past Monday, I did a presentation at a real estate, a realtor's office to all the agents, and just giving them all the facts about probate and what to look for. And it was super helpful for them, they told me, because mm-hmm. when they're meeting with clients to sell a property, they want to know if they have to go to court as early on as possible.
Right, because that can hold up the process. I had a client who had property up for sale. It actually involved a golf course, so that was a little more complicated. But probate held it up for about 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could easily go longer than that in a lot of situations, right?
Yeah, it could even go longer. And they thought they were going to have it all closed in, you know, 60 days. And here we are, you know. It finally did close, but it took a lot longer than we expected because of the probate.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they wanted to be done with that way before then.
Right. They wanted to get done with it before golf season started. So they just, that was going on over the winter.
Oh, yeah. You know, they don't want to lose that revenue from that golf season.
Right. And, you know, we talk a lot about probate and how sometimes it can be not a very difficult process. But even if it's not complicated, it's still going to take several months.
You know? Right. Regardless, even the most simple ones.
That's right. And if you have anyone raise an objection or anything that's a little unusual, that takes time. It really, can extend it. Right.
Well, so I thought it'd be fun, a fun activity today for mm-hmm. our time in the air to play a little game. We're going to call it To Probate or Not to Probate. That is the question. Little nod to Billy Shakespeare. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a few different fact patterns.
Sure.
And each one we'll pick apart. I'll throw it over to you to see what you think. Do we have to go to court? Do we not have to go to court? And if any listeners want to call in, this is a live show, and participate, feel free. I don't know. Do we have any prizes, Jamie? Anything?
We probably have some mugs. We definitely have some Herzog Law coffee mugs.
One of Dave's golf balls.
Yeah.
And some golf balls, too.
We'll
that's
give away
right.
Dave's set of clubs. That's
Well.
Yeah, he'll
right, so I don't, I'm pretty new here. I don't think I have prize giving authority at the firm yet. So,
no, but we can give away coffee mugs.
There we go. Okay. All right. So let's get started. I'm going to read the first fact pattern, and then we'll look at it together. So scenario one. Mm-hmm. Michael Scott, R.I.P., mm-hmm. passed away peacefully in his home at the old age of 96. Mm-hmm. His lovely wife, Jan Levinson, died years before him. Michael did not have a will. Mm-hmm. All of his financial accounts had his children named as beneficiaries on the accounts. He rented an apartment and did not own any real estate. Mm-hmm. So, Jay Marie, take me through this as if I was the client. I'm one of the children. Mm-hmm. I just gave you that fact pattern. Take me through your thought process, what you're looking at, and you know, determining what has to be done here, if anything.
Sure. So what I would do is go over those accounts with you that have beneficiaries on them, make sure they were all properly designated. And, you know, for each of the accounts that have beneficiaries, you can get claim forms, fill those out. You don't need to go to probate for that.
And that's pretty easy, right? I mean, what are they, as a child, they just fill out this claim form.
Right.
And provide a certified death certificate.
Right, provide a certified death certificate. That's right. Sometimes you may need to go to a bank to get a signature guarantee on the form. That's a kind of, I call it like a enhanced notary stamp, right? It's only something that a bank can do. But it's still just really filling out paperwork to get the beneficiary forms filled in and send them in. So off the top of my head, if I was looking at this with a client, I would say it probably looks like we're not going to have to go to probate.
Right.
But there's always something that comes up. So you really have to just kind of look through all the paperwork, look at last year's tax return, make sure you've looked at all the accounts that are out there and make sure we've accounted for them all.
Right, so that's where we come in, right? We have to ask the right questions, look at the right documents to see, is there something the client's not telling us? But in this, if these were the only facts and there's nothing else out there, this is a fairly easy one for us, right? There's no probate involved.
Right, probate. We can, you know, help out with the forums and, you know, it should be a relatively quick process.
So let's change it up a little bit. Scenario two. So same fact pattern as before, but the difference in this one is that Michael had a will, and that will leaves everything to his brother, Dwight. Does that change anything?
It doesn't. And some people will want to know, well, why he has a will? You know, why shouldn't it go to his brother? And the reason for that is if you have a, you know, different results, right, with beneficiary and a will, the beneficiary overrides the will, right? The beneficiary designation on your account.
Right. So Michael did some good planning. He used what we refer to as will substitutes by naming beneficiaries on his accounts, and those are his only assets. So in that scenario, that trumps the will, and Brother Dwight may be not happy with that answer.
True.
But he's not going to get anything in that scenario because they don't have to probate.
That's right. And he could even, you know, try and probate that will, say, if he was upset.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be able to get anything.
It'd probably just be a waste of money on his part, paying legal fees.
That's right.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
All right. So scenario three now. So again, same fact pattern as before. Michael has the will. That will leaves everything to his brother, Dwight, again. Mm-hmm. The difference here is that Michael is also was the owner on a deed of a house in New York that one of his daughters, Pam, lives in. And that deed says that Michael and Pam are each 50% owners as, quote, tenants in common.
Mm-hmm.
During his lifetime, Michael repeatedly told his daughter, Pam, and many other people that are close to them that his interest in that house is to pass to Pam upon his death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do we see there?
We see a contest there, possibly.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you got a 50-50 thing going on here.
You have a 50-50 thing. Pam thinks she's going to get that half of the house. Dwight has the will, says I'm the beneficiary.
Yeah.
I mean, so first of all, right off the bat, we have to go to probate on this one. And the reason we have to go to probate is because of the tenants in common.
Right, that language is super important, right, on the deed.
That's
right. What does that mean to us, tenants in common?
So tenants in common means that each person owns their half individually. So Michael owns his half, Pam owns her half, and Michael can do whatever he wants with his half by, you know, designating it in his will. So it doesn't automatically go to Pam as she thinks. His half goes under his estate as to what his will says.
But Pam is living there.
Yes, that makes it very complicated.
No, I was going to think, yeah.
Well, I mean, getting to the point of who is that other 50% owner, and, you know, in this case, Dwight may win that because he has this legal, valid will. You
That's
know,
right.
So assuming that there's no way Pam can contest the validity of the will, the court's probably going to say that, that 50% goes to Dwight's interest.
That's right.
And then, you know, but if Dwight, where you were going with this, John, is if Dwight wanted to sell that and get his money out, but Pam's living there and she's a half owner, that could become a complete mess.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I was just going to say, this does seem to be, could be messy. Pam could come right back and do whatever.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's going to be hard to own that half of the property with Dwight, right, where they may have different interests.
We see that often, unfortunately. Those become messy.
Yes, they do. I mean, I would think Pam is definitely going to try and probate the will. And we'll talk more about this situation right after the break.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we We're talking a bit about probate and not to probate and what the differences are. And you can certainly call in with your questions about probate or anything else. Our call-in number is 518-476-5900. And Phil had like presented a very good case study before the break.
Mm-hmm.
It was a complicated one because, you know, probate and real estate ownership, that's where it can get very messy sometimes. And you do need a lawyer to help you sort all that out. Right.
And by the way, anyone picking up on Michael Scott, Dwight, Pam, any popular show that comes to mind? The Office?
Yes.
Any fans?
My son is a huge fan. I don't think he's listening, but he's a huge fan.
I think I watched every episode. I was live while I was in college, so I think I've seen every episode of that show.
Oh, yeah, my son's seen every show on repeat several times, so he loves it.
So we were talking about a scenario. In this case, we had a deed, right? So Michael, who passed away in this scenario, and his daughter Pam owned the house 50-50 as tenants in common, but the will left Michael's share to his brother Dwight. And he said, unfortunately, because of that tenants in common designation, it's going to have to go through probate and the will's going to control. So let's change it up slightly, the scenario. And so same fact pattern again. Michael passes away, has the will leaving everything to his brother Dwight. They own the house 50-50, him and his daughter Pam. But this time, the deed says that Michael and Pam own the property as, quote, joint tenants with rights or survivorship. So last time it said tenants in common.
Right.
This time the deed says joint tenants at rights or survivorship. Does that make a difference, Jamarie?
Yeah, that completely changes it. So that joint tenants with rights of survivorship means that the Pam receives the property because she survived Michael. So that the will does not control in this case, or it doesn't control over the real estate.
Well, yeah, because that language supersedes the will, right? So that joint tenants rights of survivorship means upon the passing of one of the owners, the other owner automatically, as a matter of law, becomes a sole owner, despite what the will says.
Despite what the will says, that's right.
So brother Dwight's going to say, the will says I get that 50%, and Pam's going to come back and say, no, right?
No, because of the deed, I get the property. Now there may be other assets that he could get under the will, but the property clearly goes to her because of that language.
Great. So then he took that property out of probate. So that was a good result for Pam in that scenario.
Yeah. So a lot of clients come in and they say, okay, I own property, typically with a brother or a sister, maybe property they inherited from their parents, or it could be some other way. And they don't know how they hold title.
Yeah,
right?
I see that all the time, too.
Right. So it's really important. I say bring in the deed, because I said it could go two very different ways, whether it's tenants in common or joint with right of survivorship. And it means, really different things. So, and sometimes they think it's one way, but once we get the deed, we're like, oh, no,
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I see, too, that it doesn't have, we use the two examples, one says tenants in common, one says joint tenants of rights of survivorship. But sometimes it won't say anything. It'll just have their names. It'll have Jim and Pam own it 50-50. What happens in that scenario?
So the default one in that is that they own it tenants in common. So that is tricky because then you just own your own half.
Right. So then again, that if someone passes away, their half has to go through probate. It doesn't automatically go to the other owner on the deed.
Right.
Despite their intent, which it may have been.
So if we're doing estate planning for someone and they come in with the deeds, we can kind of correct that proactively.
Yeah.
So it's really good to review everything. That's why it's good to review everything you have. I met with clients this week and it was the same situation. He knew that he owned property, a camp with his brother that they had gotten from their parents, but they didn't know whether it was tenants in common or joint tenants.
Right.
So his homework was to get that deed and send it to me so we could see what to do with our planning.
Right. Yeah, that's always one of the first questions. Let me see the deed. We're going to be able to determine what has to be done, how it's owned.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right. So you're ready for the next one?
Okay.
Feeling
I'm ready
good?
For the next one.
All right.
Yeah,
here we go.
This is a fun game here.
It's like law school.
And you're doing
Tim.
Great, Jane Marie. That's
right.
You should become a lawyer.
I thought about that. Yeah.
All right. So fact pattern five. Mm-hmm. Danny Tanner died and was survived by his three daughters, DJ, Stephanie, and Michelle, and he wasn't married at the time of his death.
Mm-hmm.
He had a will that he executed later in his life, that he signed later in life, while he was sick, leaving his home and all other assets to his neighbor, Kimmy Gibbler, who had become unusually close with Danny before he signed the will as he became sicker and his mental capacity declined.
Mm-hmm.
Danny also had a trust that he created after the will, which named his daughters as equal beneficiaries of the trust. The deed for his house had been transferred to his trust many years ago, and all of his other financial accounts had his daughters as designated beneficiaries on them. So what's important in that fact pattern?
Well, it's important that Danny did some great planning.
Yes,
before
Danny did good here. Yeah.
So sounds to me like he did some really good planning while he was younger and had capacity, because this is a situation we see very often that as you get older, you can sometimes get influenced by someone in your life to try and change your estate plan.
Yeah, and financial exploitation is a huge issue among the senior population. It's unfortunate that it is, but you know, we see it all the time. And
right, we see many cases about that where, you know, they're befriended by someone. It could be that they just give them a little bit of money to help them out. Or in the worst case, it's like this, where they kind of get involved in that person's life and bring them somewhere to have their legal papers changed.
Right. And so in this example, this you know, neighbor who became close at the end of life is named as the beneficiary of everything in the will. So the will generally says, you know, everything goes to this Kimmy Gibbler. Is she going to get anything here, most likely?
Well, I mean, so she would try and probate the will, right? First of all, the kids would probably contest the will because they're like, well, why is she named? And it's very suspicious when a non-family member is named and the kids aren't,
right?
So that kind of raises the bar right there. But let's assume she can get past that hurdle, like they contest the will and they lose and, okay, she has the will probated. She's still not going to get anything.
Right. And why is that? What did Danny do that was good planning here?
Well, what he did was great. It was he did a trust, and the trust takes priority over the will. It's what the house is in the trust. The trust names his children. So that's going to automatically go to the children, even though the will says something different.
And that's key what you said there, that the house is in the trust, right? Because the trust is only going to control the assets that have been transferred into the trust. So we call it funding the trust.
That's right.
And sometimes we'll see trusts that aren't funded. And in that example, the trust doesn't control anything.
That's right. So, yeah, I always tell clients that the trust is a two-step process, right? I mean, first we draft the trust, you come in and sign it, we get that all done, you know, done, but you're not done, right? Then step two is to take that trust document and go to different financial institutions and to put the assets into there. I mean, we do the deed for you. We make sure your house gets into the trust. So trust funding is just as important as setting up the trust.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So Kimmy tried to swoop in this example, but Kimmy didn't have any luck because Danny did some good planning. That's great. I love to see that result.
That's right. I mean, he also had put his kids as beneficiaries on his bank accounts. So that's another way to avoid probate. You know, besides having a trust, you can do beneficiary designations. And that's a good way.
And that's really easy, too, right? That's a matter of me going to my bank or me contacting my financial institutions and saying, I want to put these people as beneficiaries on the accounts. They may have you fill out a change of beneficiary form or
but
pretty simple. And if I want to change that, I don't have to see an attorney. I can do it myself.
Right.
So pretty easy.
It's a good way to do it. Some clients are like, oh, I have to get their social security number. What a pain. I'm like, okay.
It's worth it, people. It's worth
it. Yeah, it's worth it. Call your kids, get their numbers, and then go put them on the accounts, right?
All right, so we have time for one more, right?
We do.
This is a good one, too. All right, so here we go. Vincent Chase is a successful actor who owns multiple properties in New York, California, and Florida. All right, a lot of properties.
Complicated there. Oh, right.
The deeds for all of these properties are in his name solely.
Ooh.
All of his financial accounts have his brother, Johnny Chase, as designated beneficiary. Vince had created a trust during his lifetime, which states that his brother, Johnny Chase, is to inherit all of his real estate upon Vincent's death. He also had signed a will years before he created the trust, stating that all of his assets passed to his agent, Ari Gold.
Oh, boy.
What are we looking at here?
The agent thing.
I don't
like it right there.
Right. I don't like it. Why should the agent get everything?
Yeah,
right.
That in and of itself is suspicious. But
that's suspicious.
Let's assume it is a valid will. And
undue influence, maybe?
That's right. But so what else do we see here that's important out of that fact pattern?
So this is a really great fact pattern because he has a trust, right? He has a will. But in this case, neither one of them are going to apply to the real estate. Well, actually, no, let me back up. Right. He has a trust, but that doesn't apply to the real estate because he didn't put the deeds into the trust.
Right, because I said that the deeds were in his name individually. Right.
So the deeds that were in his name go through probate and they go under the will.
So that's not great for brother Johnny Chase. And even if the trust, like I said, specifically says, well, my real estate goes to my brother Johnny Chase.
And I could see him saying that. Look, I have this trust. I'm supposed to get the real estate. Well, unfortunately, he never put the real estate into the trust.
So the intent there from Vince was great. He created this trust, and I'm sure he had all his reasons to do that. Everything's going to go to my brother Johnny. But like we were saying before, what the crucial error here was that the trust wasn't funded. So Vince should have deeds prepared for each of those properties in different states.
Right.
And they should have been transferred into the trust, and the trust would control.
Right.
And what about the fact, you know, now for Ari, so Ari Gold is under the will. He gets all these properties.
Right.
Does the fact that each of those properties are in different states mean anything to him?
Of course it does. So, I mean, I don't think you should get anything, but that's beside the point, right? I mean, if the will goes through, the will goes through. But let's say we're representing him now. We have to do something called, well, it's probate in each of the states. It's called an ancillary probate. It's the legal term. You have to do a probate in each state where you have real estate.
Yeah, so three probate proceedings here,
three
right?
Three probate proceedings.
You got about 1 minute.
Sure. So you have to start off in New York. He's appointed there. Then you have to take those papers and then go to each of the other courts. Oops. And then do like a full probate there. I'm just knocking down your whole thing here. Yeah. Tearing
Jean
down
the studio.
Do me a
very
favor
excited.
Knock it down.
We have this clear plastic thing up from COVID days.
But yeah.
So yeah, in that scenario, you know, in Ari's point of view, that's terrible. Now you have three sets of attorney fees, potentially three sets of court fees. It could take three times as long as it normally would. So on his part, but the bottom line here in that example and the example before is trusts can be a wonderful planning tool to avoid issues, but they have to be done properly and they have to be funded.
Yeah, to kind of bring it back to like a lot of our client situations who are retired, they have a second home in, you know, Florida or wherever. And if they have a trust, we can put your second home in the trust and avoid a Florida probate.
Absolutely. And that's a common scenario. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an easy way to avoid those additional costs and fees.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that little game.
Yeah, it was a fun game.
That was great.
Yeah.
Was
good. Enjoy your babycation.
Thank you. I'll see everybody soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.